running from me. That won't help us find your father.
There is nothing to discuss. She couldn't imagine talking about what had happened.
Obviously there is, or you would be more relaxed.
You are a stranger.
One deeply indebted for what you did for me.
He took a step forward.
Miss Davidson, I am a physician. I understand the dangers of influenza, especially since I was not of good health when I fell ill. Without you, I would have died.
Or you might have survived, her practical nature pointed out, but heat rose to her cheeks.
Possibly.
There was a beat of silence.
We made love.
Sabrina wished the floor would open up and swallow her whole.
There are responsibilities to it, you know, he said.
She found breathing difficult. She pretended he had vanished, poof, gone. But when she glanced up, he still stood right in front of her.
Do you understand what I'm talking about?
He pressed, as if he wasn't certain she'd grasped his meaning.
I understand, Sabrina said.
She could not meet his eye. She tried, but the whole conversation was awkward to her. I realise the possible outcomes. She was trying not to think about them. She'd panic if she found herself with child.
I take my responsibilities seriously. Even though my circumstances are not what I'd wish them to be, there is more to me than meets the eye. I will claim any child of mine.
Sabrina nodded, her throat tight.
I also want you to know, he continued, his voice growing deeper as he lowered it, that I am aware of the gift you gave me, and I value it.
He was referring to her virginity.
She was mortified. Who could have realised that an experimental kiss could lead to such total humiliation? In fact, once she found her father, she might leave for a nunnery if such places still existed.
And she fervently prayed she wasn't with child, because right now, this moment, she vowed she must never kiss another man the rest of her life. Never, ever. It wasn't safe, apparently, especially for her, because while she was feeling complete shame for what had happened between them, a part of her wouldn't mind another kiss.
Yes, that was right.
In a way she'd never imagined she could ever feel before, she had an irrational desire to kiss Mr. Enright again.
I am a gentleman, he was saying to her. I understand the danger of a woman in your position being compromised. You don't need to fear that I will say something to anyone beyond this room. It will be as if it never happened.
Never happened? Those words caught her attention.
I understand country society, he explained. The gossips can be cruel.
That was true. However,
but you wish to act as if it never happened, she argued.
His head tilted as if he sensed an undercurrent between them, that he didn't quite trust. There was an undercurrent, one she was creating and didn't quite understand. Only seconds before, Sabrina had been embarrassed to hear him speak about their coupling, but she hadn't expected him to wish to pretend as if it had never happened.
How offensive!
The words just flowed from her lips out into the space between them. Mr. Enright held up his hand as if an entreaty to peace.
I only thought to reassure you.
By letting me know I'm unimportant.
Did no one see her as a woman, even the man who had taken her purity? Those expressive brows of his rose, saying louder than words that he knew he was in trouble.
You are tired, he said, backing away. It has been a trying day.
Now he was running. Mr. Enright, stop telling me how I feel.
I didn't mean to do so, he quickly said.
And understand, there will be nothing of a carnal nature between us.
Carnal?
He said the word as if it were quaint.
Absolutely not.
Because you don't wish it?
She asked, testing him and testing herself. Her anger made her feel powerful. He stopped his retreat, a militant gleam coming to his own eye.
Oh, I wish it. In fact, I would not mind another.
He broke off, as if suddenly questioning the wisdom of what he was about to say, then tried again.
Miss Davidson, you don't have experience at these matters. I do, and...
Was it her imagination, or did he blush as he spoke? As if he was a bit embarrassed at the admission.
What happened between us in your bed was the natural course of things, but Our reaction to each other was far from common. It was not common at all. And what I wanted you to understand is that I don't treat anything you did for me lightly.
Sabrina didn't know what to say. His directness flustered her. It was one thing to be attracted to him. He was masculine and handsome, a deadly combination for any woman. But she didn't want to like him. Liking was a more potent a force than desire. She needed to keep the space between them. Oh yes, she did, especially when he smiled. He held out his hand.
I want you to trust me. I know I don't have a right to ask. My situation is difficult, however, I am not the villain they paint me.
She glanced down at the hand he offered and found she wished he had offered a kiss instead. Such an irrational, insane thought. She was completely complicit in her own undoing. And she couldn't help wondering why she felt this strong attraction for him. Her father would not approve. Anyone with common sense would warn her from him.
Everything is fine, she managed to say.
She did not take his hand. Protect herself. She had to protect herself from herself, because she had a strong urge to walk right into his arms. Mac pulled back his hand. Her missishness was damn annoying. She was prickly as a hedgehog, but there was a vulnerability about her as well, and he'd already tasted her passion, something he wouldn't mind experiencing again. Why had he followed her up the stairs? Yes, he needed to assure her that he was honourable, but he'd be lying to himself if he didn't admit he was hoping to breach her defences. She fascinated him. She was moral, she was upright, and this afternoon she'd given him the ride of his life. Who could blame him for wanting to see if the intense release he'd experienced with her had been because of his months of celibacy, or if there was something different, magical about her? Mac had only loved one woman in his life. She had proven to him that love was a phantom, a piece of nonsense. Moira had chosen Lorcan. She'd given herself to the brother with the title. Over the years, especially on the eves before battles, Mac had wondered what it would have been like if he'd had a wife, if he had become the healer, the country doctor he'd set out to be. Would he have been at peace? But life had not taken him that direction. His temper and his pride had demanded he leave Ireland. Back in those days, he'd not understood the power behind forgiveness. However, standing in this room with Miss Davidson's presence filling his senses and an empty bed waiting to be used, Mac found himself damn hard in a way he hadn't felt in years. Yes, he was being conciliatory, but he wouldn't lie to himself. Behind his request for trust was a very real hope that she'd curl up in bed beside him and let him kiss away those faint worry lines marring her brow. She spoke. We need to take care of what we should be doing. For one thing, Mrs. Bosley is right, you do need new clothes. There are some things in a trunk in the attic.
I tried on a shirt hanging in the wardrobe in the other room, he said. It was too small. My shoulders, he added, pointing out to her how wide and strong they were. It couldn't hurt.
And she did consider his shoulders. Solemnly. He tried not to preen. The shirts in the other room are father's. They need some repairs, she said. The ones in the attic may not be in better shape. We shall need to check closely, and if we choose them tonight, I'll have time to do repairs. This way, she ordered. The lavender and roses scent of her soap, the same soap he'd used, trailed in the air as she passed him on her way to the attic. He mindlessly fell into step. He wondered if he had ever been so taken by a woman, including Moira. Even the women in France lacked Miss Davidson's simple grace. At the attic door, she paused. Will you go first and carry the candles? Sometimes bats find their way into the attic. I detest going up there.
No problem, he assured her.
She reached up to feel the ledge of the doorframe and pulled down a key to unlock the door. The clothes are in the first trunk at the top of the stairs.
We'll see what we can cobble together, Mac replied. I can be very resourceful.
You will need to be, she assured him, and opened the door. Stairs led up into the inky darkness. Mac had to duck to pass through the door. He started climbing the stairs, holding the candles, so that her path behind him would be well lit. The attic was dry, but cold and dusty. He listened for the sound of bats. He, too, was not fond of them. The door slammed behind him. The key turned in the lock, and Mac realised he'd just fallen for the simplest trick there was. Chapter 13. Sabrina stepped back from the door, the key still in her hand. She'd done it. She'd locked him in. She did a happy jig at her cleverness. She was free from temptation. The light from the candles he held outlined the gaps between the door and the doorframe.
"Miss Davidson," came his deep voice with its melodic accent. "Open the door."
He sounded so reasonable she found herself smiling.
That was it. Open the door.
Sabrina laughed to herself. "I'm afraid I mustn't, Mr. Enright. I'm safer with you on the other side of the door and a lock between us."
"I have no intention of hurting you."
"Oh, you have intentions, sir," she informed him, "but they shall not bear fruit." She couldn't believe she was saying this. It felt good to put a man in his proper place, to have a bit of power.
"You misunderstand me,"
he said, more steel in his voice. For a second, she wondered if she did. Old doubts resurfaced, but she tamped them down. "I understand you very well," she informed the door. And then, because she was an honest person, she admitted, "I also realise that your hopes in that..." She paused, needing the right word. "Your hopes in that lascivious direction may have been with some justification."
"Lascivious?"
His voice boomed from the other side of the door.
"Yes, lascivious," she echoed. "It means licentious, immoral, loose..."
"I know what lascivious means, Miss Davidson. I am not lascivious."
Sabrina found that statement strangely deflating. Had she misread him? She did not believe so.
"What I am,"
he continued, sounding as if he stood right in front of the door,
"is a man who woke to having a woman kiss him."
"And has expectations for it," she declared, triumphant.
He did have lascivious thoughts.
"And then," he continued, as if she hadn't spoken, his voice dropping a notch lower, "she allowed me the pleasure of certain other things. Breasts, loins, and private bits."
Heat rose up her neck. It was true, she had allowed it.
"Not that I complain," he hastened to add. "I thought I'd made it very clear how appreciative I was."
And that was what had made her uncomfortable. She found she didn't like being appreciated. It was too tame a word.
"Like I said, I'm safer with you locked in the attic," she answered.
"Then you could say, Mac, my friend, not tonight."
"Your name is Mac?"
She caught on this piece of personal information.
"From Cormac. My friends call me Mac."
There was a beat, then he said,
"You can call me Mr. Enright."
"I don't know why you are so upset. I should protect myself."
"You make it sound as if I am a lecher." "Well, I am not a green lad who pouts when a lady says no. Not that one ever has. But I don't force myself on women. And you don't need to lock me up for the night. I hate being locked up. I've been locked up enough to last a lifetime."
He grew more agitated as he spoke, and she believed him. If she had been locked up the way he had, she'd probably feel the same way, especially if she was innocent. Although, she reminded herself, his innocence had not yet been proven. Still, it couldn't be pleasant to have people want to hang you. She stepped toward the door.
"I don't do this because of you," she admitted. "I do it for my own peace of mind. I didn't mean to tumble into your arms or take advantage of your situation. Well, yes, I did, didn't I?"
It was easy to confess to a door. There was no danger, and it was good for the soul.
"What happened between us? Well, I just wondered what it would be like to kiss a man. That seems to be an experience that every woman should know, and yet I've never had the opportunity. At the age when I should have been courted, I had responsibilities. My mother was ill and she needed me. Then my father often had tasks and duties that required my help. And it isn't as if I begrudge them any of it. I don't, but I did lose a portion of my own life. No, I gave it up, actually."
There, she'd admitted it. Dame Agatha would approve. Sabrina paused a moment. Since she was making a clean breast of matters, she might as well divulge all. "And I hate being the spinster in the valley. Everyone calls me such behind my back. They don't mean any harm by it. To them, the spinster is just who I am. They don't realise the loneliness in that word. Sabrina leaned her head against the door. The cool wood felt good to her brow. And they also believe that I'm sensible. Can you imagine that? She had to laugh at her own culpability. My cousins and friends come to me for advice. They tell me I am wise, and I thought I was until I kissed you. That's when I discovered there were many things I did not understand. Who knew a single kiss could be that powerful? Her question circled in the air around her. It wasn't just the kiss. Being joined with him seemed to have opened her to a whole new experience. For a span of time, she'd lost a bit of herself in him. I shall never judge anyone harshly again, she whispered. She placed her hand on the door as if she could touch him, her lover. I know that what we did means very little to a man.
Who said that?
His voice surprised her. She'd started to think she was merely speaking her thoughts aloud, something she often did when she was alone. Slightly embarrassed, she confessed. People, I've heard it said. They all claim men aren't like women. Men are like bees that must go from flower to flower.
Bees?
There was both annoyance and humour in his voice.
Miss Davidson, you must stop talking to fools. Of course the joining of a man and a woman means something. In its finest form, it is the closest any of us comes to heaven.
After what she'd experienced that afternoon, she could believe what he said.
What is your given name? He asked.
He wished to know. Sabrina, she smiled and added. But you may call me Miss Davidson, he answered with a sharp, short laugh. Her father had little time for what he called her prattle, and most people in the valley always acted alarmed when she showed any humour. Along with being the spinster, apparently she was considered very serious as well. But Mr. Enright interacted with her as an equal. She now thought she was doubly wise to keep space between them. I'll unlock the door tomorrow after I return from my uncle's, she promised. I'll give you a full report of what I learn at that time. Now, I must warn you that you must be quiet during the day. Mrs. Patton will be here. She's the cook and housekeeper. It's best she doesn't know you are here. There was a beat of silence and he asked,
You always try to be everything people think of you.
Yes, of course. Why should I not? She waited for a response. There wasn't any. Did you hear what I said? She asked.
Go to sleep, Miss Davidson, was his reply.
He didn't wait for her response. The light disappeared from under the door, and she heard his footsteps climb the attic stairs. Sabrina stood in the dark, looking at the door as if she could see through it. She should not trust him. He could have murdered that girl. But she didn't believe he had. Murder did not seem to be in his nature. He was the sort who would have just walked away. However, she'd be wise to be wary. She didn't replace the key in its keeping place over the door. Instead, she took it to her room and placed it under her pillow. Undressing quickly and putting on her nightdress, she slid beneath the covers. Her fingers brushed the key, and she told herself she felt safe. Her last thought before drifting off to sleep was the memory of making love to him right here in this bed. The sun had been up for hours by the time Sabrina woke. She was startled by how well she'd slept and for how long. Apparently, she had been exhausted. Her first thought was of Mr. Enright. Last night, locking him in the attic had been right and expedient. However, this morning, with a clearer mind, she realised she had certain responsibilities to him. The man needed to eat and to wash. She hadn't given him water or anything last night. The thought made her feel guilty. She also needed to feed Rolf and Dumpling. The floor was cold on her bare feet. She threw a dressing gown over her nightdress. She hadn't bothered to braid her hair before falling into bed last night, and it was a tangled mess. She also needed to polish her teeth and wash the sleep from her eyes. But she would take care of her guest's needs first. Doing so would be a form of penance for keeping him locked up. The key was still under her pillow. She dropped it into the pocket of her gown and walked barefoot to the attic door. When she'd passed her father's room, all was as she'd left it. He had still not returned. She knocked on the door. Mr. Enright? He didn't answer, but then considering how surly he'd been last night, she was not put off. Why, he could even still be asleep.
I'll be up in a few minutes with water and something for your breakfast.
She hoped she could keep that last promise. He'd eaten all the stew and what was left of the bread for their dinner. Mrs. Patton usually had a meat pie tucked away in the pantry for those times when the magistrate was out late seeing to his duties. As for herself, all she needed was a cup of good strong tea before she dealt with either the issue of Mr. Enright or her father. She never thought clearly until she had her morning cup. She would put the kettle on to boil while she prepared a tray for her unwanted guest. Going downstairs, Sabrina was just approaching the kitchen when she realised the back door was wide open. Her heart stopped. Had her father returned? The sound of a chair scraping the kitchen floor caught her attention. Someone was in there. Sabrina hastened her step, then slowed, as Rolf came out of the kitchen to greet her, a happy smile on his hound face. Her father would not let the dog in, ever. She took one step, two steps, and peeked around the door. A gasp of shock escaped her. Mr. Enright stood in the kitchen, half naked. He wore his black breeches and his boots had been given a polish. He must have found the kit that was in the cleaning cupboard. He was not wearing his shirt or a jacket. Any word she might have spoken died in her throat. She'd admired his chest before when she'd been applying the poultice, but there was something about his being hale and healthy and naked that robbed her of speech. Mr. Enright was all hard, strong muscle. His body was lean but seemingly perfect. Oh yes, there was the scar, and the sight of it sent heat to her cheeks, because she had known it was there. He shouldn't be tempting her in this manner. "Where are your clothes?" The harshness in her tone came from her blushing awkwardness, and a morsel, well, perhaps more than a morsel, of lust. Pure, unbridled, never-before-imagined lust. He was in the act of pouring hot water into a washbowl that was kept in the kitchen for when the occasion warranted it. Her father's shaving kit was laid out on the table. He had to have been wandering around the house, and she'd not pushed her dresser in front of her closed bedroom door. He looked up and smiled, as if he knew what she was thinking, all the way to thoughts of his nakedness. She was gaining enough knowledge of his character to notice that he had a lopsided smile when he was especially pleased with himself. It was positively crooked right now.
"Good morning, Miss Davidson," he greeted her cheerily. "My shirt and jacket are on that chair, thank you for asking. I did manage to find a few things in the trunk. Lucky for me, they don't need an airing, but I didn't want to stain them if I make a slop of shaving, so I haven't put them on yet."
He changed the subject.
"I have a pot of tea steeping here. Would you care for a cup?"
She reached in her dressing gown pocket. Yes, the key was still there. The attic door had been closed when she'd checked it just moments ago.
"I hope you don't mind, but I fed Rolf," he continued, pouring tea for her as if she had assented. "I found a bone in the pantry that appeared as if it was waiting for him."
No wonder the dog adored him. But then Sabrina realised that he'd given the bone to Rolf in the kitchen. The hound was now stretched out in front of the fire, gnawing away. Her father would raise the roof if he caught the dog in the kitchen chewing on a bone. She didn't think it was such a good idea either. Sabrina snatched the bone from Rolf's jaws. It was a slobbery thing, and she held it away from her as she carried it down the hall, Rolf prancing at her heels. She threw the bone out into the back garden. Rolf bounded after it. She closed the door. For a second she stood, trying to make sense of it all, and then she grew angry. She stomped to the kitchen. "How did you escape?" He was lathering his face with the soap he'd mixed in her father's shaving mug. He ran it all around his jaw with expert ease before saying,
"I climbed out the window."
"From 3 floors up? She asked, incredulous.
"If that is the distance, then that is what I did," he answered.
"I don't believe you," she said. "The attic window is tiny."
He raised his brows, as if what she thought was of little consequence to him. After all, he was standing in the kitchen. With practiced concentration, he began applying the sharp razor to his skin, and if Sabrina had thought it hard to think before, well, watching this most masculine of actions robbed her brain of any critical thought. And she'd never been that way before. Then again, she'd never met anyone like Cormac Enright. He rinsed the lather off the blade in the washbowl.
By the way, you look quite fetching this morning, Miss Davidson. There's something about bare toes peeking out from beneath the hem of a nightdress that sparks a man's imagination.
The compliment startled her, until she realised it wasn't flattery but a poke, gently said, about her own state of undress, and she was mortified. She'd been so busy between ogling him, she'd forgotten she was, for all intents and purposes, déshabillée.
Which would have been fine if they had been in a boudoir, and some place far more sophisticated than Aberfeldy, but they were not. Sabrina began backing toward the door. "Where are you going?" he asked.
The cheeky devil. He knew she'd forgotten herself. However, before she could answer, there was a sound of humming at the back door. It began to open. "Mrs. Patton," Sabrina said, in a horrified whisper. Chapter 14. To his credit, Mr. Enright understood the situation immediately. It would not be good for Sabrina to be caught with a half-naked man. The gossip would fly through the valley. She had no illusions about Mrs. Patton's loyalty. A good story was a good story. Half of his face still covered with shaving cream, he pulled her back into the kitchen and stepped out into the hall. Sabrina cowered behind the kitchen wall, wondering what was to become of her. She heard Mrs. Patton give a short cry of surprise at the sight of a stranger in her house. From her vantage point, Sabrina could only see Mr. Enright, but she could imagine the look on the cook's face as she took in their lathered guest. Mrs. Patton had a weakness for a handsome gentleman.
"I'm so sorry," Mr. Enright said, again with that morning cheerfulness. "I didn't mean to startle you."
"Who are you?" Mrs. Patton answered with her customary forthrightness.
"Colonel Cormac Enright."
He clicked his heels and gave a short bow, a polite one.
"I'm a guest of Magistrate Davidson. He's already left for an appointment. I was taking advantage of the peace to shave in your kitchen. I hope that doesn't upset you."
He knew it wouldn't. He understood the power of his masculine charm. Sabrina was also certain that he was supremely confident that the sight of his bare chest would rattle Mrs. Patton enough that she would accept anything he said, and he was right. The cook started making a clucking sound like a hen feathering her nest.
"No, no," she assured him. "You don't have anything I haven't seen before, Colonel.
Hen cluck, hen cluck, hen cluck. Don't let me interrupt your shaving." "I can take it somewhere else," he offered,
taking a step closer to her. Mrs. Patton's chortling clucks grew higher, and Sabrina could well imagine her round face giddy with pleasure as she said,
"Oh, don't be so silly, Colonel."
"Yes, silly," Sabrina wanted to echo. "Silly, giddy hen." Mr. Enright waved his hand behind his back at her, catching her attention. He was signalling that she should make her escape. She could sneak to the stairs in the safety of her room now. To Mrs. Patton, he said,
"Tell me about that pony in the stables."
Sabrina stuck her head out into the hall and realised he was directing Mrs. Patton toward the back door. He had also positioned himself to block Mrs. Patton's view of the kitchen. Mrs. Patton was not one to stint on talking.
"A fine Highland pony Dumpling is. You'll have to ask Miss Sabrina about him. She reared him herself from a foal. A farmer had given up on him, said he would never live. But our Miss Sabrina adores her animals, and she has a gift for healing. That pony owes her its life. I say, where is Miss Sabrina?"
Sabrina was almost to the stairs. She tried not to look back. The impulse was hard to ignore.
"I don't believe she is up yet," Mr. Enright answered. "I'm escorting her to call on her uncle, the Earl of Tay, today."
"Escorting her?"
There was a wealth of speculation in Mrs. Patton's voice.
"Yes, we have a visit planned," he answered,
as if he hadn't known what he'd just done. Sabrina had not been planning to take him with her when she called on her uncle, but now she would. Who knew what other suggestions would pass from his lips to Mrs. Patton's ears if she didn't keep him close to her all day?
"Have you had anything to eat?" Mrs. Patton wondered.
"I made a cup of tea."
Mrs. Patton made a sound of weary forbearance.
"Isn't that like the magistrate?" she said. "Here we have a guest and he doesn't tell me. I imagine Miss Sabrina didn't know to expect you either.
It was a surprise, Mr. Enright murmured.
Sabrina reached the stairs. She now lingered. She couldn't help herself.
Well, what can one say? Mrs. Patton said. Back when Mr. Davidson still had his man Emery working for him, I'd have an idea of what was going to happen. Emery would put the word in my ear. However, now it is anyone's guess what will happen from day to day.
What happened to Emery?
Mr. Enright asked, and Sabrina could have groaned aloud because she knew Mrs. Patton would answer honestly.
Oh, the magistrate let him go, the cook said. He couldn't afford his wages. I tell you, this is a fine family, but the Earl, that is a different story. The man ruins everything he touches. He'd have Mr. Davidson and Miss Sabrina begging in the street if he had his way.
Sabrina could listen to no more. She wanted to staunch the flow of words coming from Mrs. Patton's mouth, but the only way to do that was with her properly clothed presence. She flew up the stairs and dashed to her room. Ripping off her dressing gown and nightclothes, she threw them who knows where and dove into her wardrobe for a dress. She grabbed a blue day dress with lace trim at the collar. It was the sort of thing she would usually save for Sunday services, but she wasn't being choosy at the moment. The water in the pitcher was from the day before and cold. Sabrina didn't care. She scrubbed her face, polished her teeth, and tried to tame her heavy hair. Her fingers nimbly braided it, then she pinned it into a coil at the base of her neck. She grabbed her driving gloves and charged out of the room, not stopping until she reached the bottom of the step to take a deep breath.
Calm.
She must appear calm and serene, as if Mr. Enright were any normal guest of the house. It had been very clever of him to suggest that the magistrate had been called away on business. The smell of frying sausages drifted from the kitchen. Mrs. Patton was enthusiastically telling Mr. Enright the history of the valley, and probably of the Davidsons. Sabrina plastered a smile on her face and entered the room. Mr. Enright came to his feet at her entrance. He was, thankfully, dressed. However, Sabrina realised here was a man who looked as good in his clothes as he did without them. The bottle green wool jacket he'd scrounged from the attic fit tight across his shoulders, but that only served to emphasise their breadth and the muscles beneath the material. He tied his neckcloth in a simple knot. She was now glad, in a very feminine way, that she was wearing one of her best dresses.
"Miss Sabrina, you look as if you slept well," Mrs. Patton said approvingly. "I've been feeding our guest a few sausages. Would you like one?"
"I'm not really hungry," Sabrina said. The cup of tea Mr. Enright had poured for her earlier was still on the table. Sabrina sat down in the chair beside his and took a sip. It was tepid, but what she needed.
"What are you drinking?"
Mrs. Patton asked, her brows raised in horror. "That cup has been sitting there. Was it yours, Colonel?"
Yes, Mr. Enright said. "But I didn't drink from it. I poured it and left it on the table. I'm sorry," he apologised, covering up for Sabrina's mistake and this bit of proof she had been in the kitchen earlier.
"It is not a problem," Mrs. Patton said,
none the wiser.
"You can enjoy as many cups of tea as you wish, sir. As for you, Miss Sabrina, here is a clean cup, and I have a fresh pot."
Chastened, Sabrina took the cup and held it out. Mr. Enright poured the tea. She was conscious of his easy grace as he leaned toward her to fill her cup. His jaw was smooth, and the scent of the shaving soap clean and spicy. He'd raided her father's cache, obviously forswearing her lavender and rose scent. The thought made her smile. He smiled in return. Their moment was interrupted as Mrs. Patton shoved the pan practically between them, forcing Mr. Enright and Sabrina to lean away from each other.
"Are you certain you wouldn't like a sausage?" the cook pressed.
It was unlike Mrs. Patton to be so forward.
"I'm certain," Sabrina said.
But the cook wasn't listening to her. She'd turned her bum practically in Sabrina's face to coax Mr. Enright to eat the last sausage.
"I hate to see food go to waste. I imagine you are the same, Colonel."
"I am," Mr. Enright said. "But I can eat no more. Perhaps we should give Rolf a treat."
"Aye, we could do that," Mrs. Patton agreed,
something she would never have allowed if Sabrina had suggested such an idea. "I believe we need to be on our way," Sabrina said. "To pay your respects on the Earl?" Mrs. Patton wanted to know. She started making the hen-nesting sounds again, and her eyes were alight as if she had matchmaking on her mind. "Yes, we are," Sabrina said, and shot the woman a look, willing her to return to her old self. Sabrina walked briskly out of the kitchen, expecting Mr. Enright to follow if he could ever escape Mrs. Patton's clutches. She remembered that her bonnet was in her father's office. She found the bonnet on the floor. Thankfully, it was not the worse for their struggles. She tied the ribbon under her chin and went outside. The day was a good one. The air was clear with the autumn sun, promising a warm afternoon. Sabrina decided she didn't need an outer garment. There were not many clouds in the sky, so they would not have to worry about rain. She went to the stable and hitched Dumpling to the cart. Rolf had left his bone long enough to come see what she was doing. He padded back to his bone, which he playfully threw into the air before settling down to chew on it again. Mr. Enright had not come out of the house yet. In truth, Sabrina had expected him to follow her out the door. He hadn't. Sabrina stood out in the yard, believing she could be patient and failing miserably. She stomped to the door and opened it. "Mr. Enright, we should be leaving."
"Yes, yes," he said, laughter in his voice. "I'm coming."
"Wait, wait," Mrs. Patton said. "And here is what my youngest son said. I thought it was the apples." Both Mrs. Patton and Mr. Enright laughed uproariously at that statement. Sabrina hadn't heard anything funny.
"What a scamp," Mr. Enright said. "You have your hands full with him."
He came out of the kitchen.
"That I do," Mrs. Patton answered, following him. "I'll roast venison for dinner this evening. You like venison, don't you, sir?"
"I like all food," Mr. Enright answered.
He placed a black hat on his head, setting the wide brim at a rakish angle. It was the type of hat an ostler would wear, and Sabrina wondered where he'd found it in the attic. He now made a dashing appearance, and Sabrina was not pleased at the way her heart seemed to skip a beat at the sight of him. She wished to outgrow her attraction to him, not fall deeper under its spell.
"I don't have all day to stand here," she practically barked.
"I am here," he answered. "Mrs. Patton does like to talk."
"Not usually," Sabrina lied. He smiled, the expression relaxed, and that frustrated her as well. She didn't want to feel all mixed up inside. Feeling this way about Mr. Enright was ridiculous. If she was going to be fluttery around a man, it should be one from the valley, a suitable man, a salt-of-the-earth kind of man. What a condemned convict. Then again, she wasn't taking him to see her uncle for her own amusement. She was tolerating his company for her father's sake. Also, she nobly told herself.
"Would you like for me to drive?" he asked.
"Do you know the way?" she said, sounding more snappish than she had intended.
"No."
"Then I shall drive." He shrugged as if it had not been an issue one way or the other for him, and hopped into the cart. He leaned against one side and stretched his long legs out, placing the heels of his boots on the other side of the cart. He took up more than his fair share of the space, crowding her a bit.
"Are you comfortable?" she asked archly. He smiled his satisfaction and said,
"Carry on."
She thought about refusing his order. She could tell him that she and Dumpling weren't going anywhere until he sat up straight. But then, what good would that do, except to make her look more peevish than she already did? She snapped the reins, and they were off. Dumpling started at a smart clip, and Sabrina let him go. Mr. Enright crossed his arms against his chest, his hat low on his head, and acted as if he was enjoying the ride. They drove through Aberfeldy, following the winding road that led to Anfield. There were a number of people out and about. Many tipped their hats or waved to Sabrina. They all stared hard when they realised she was not alone, and that the man with her was not her father. Oh yes, jaws dropped open, especially the female ones. And Sabrina found it curious that so many people could immediately notice and appreciate Mr. Enright. She herself was usually so busy with whatever was occupying her mind, she didn't register people immediately, not the details of them. It was humbling to realise how imperceptive she could be. Is your life easier that every woman who crosses your path finds you attractive? She heard herself ask. Out of the corner of her eye, she could see him tilt his head in her direction, his expression one of confusion.
Not everyone finds me attractive.
I beg to differ.
Do you find me attractive? He asked.
Now they were on dangerous territory. Sabrina kept her gaze on the road, but her attention was on him. I asked out of curiosity.
Curiosity killed the cat, he replied lightly.
I'm afraid that was true, she agreed, without realizing what she was admitting. He laughed. This time the sound was richer than it had been, less rusty and with more feeling. I wasn't being funny, Sabrina said, a bit put off.
No, you weren't. But I find your candour, Miss Sabrina, charming.
He'd used her given name. She was torn between being afraid of his becoming too familiar and wanting him closer. She couldn't have it both ways. She knew which one was the wisest. I'm just saying that life is easier for the attractive, she pressed, clinging to the idea that they were having a theoretical conversation. My cousins Eileen and Tara are beautiful women, and life has always worked out very well for them.
You are a beautiful woman.
Sabrina almost drove the pony cart off the side of the road. She hoped he hadn't noticed.
Please,
she said, infusing in that one word her dismissal of his comment.
Do you believe I jest? He asked.
He had brought his feet in the cart so he could better turn toward her. I'm not vain, she said, nor am I fishing for compliments.
I'm not paying a compliment. I'm stating a fact.
She felt heat rush to her cheeks. She wasn't beautiful, but she was flattered he had called her so. I'm not a fool, she protested softly. You would just like another tryst with me.
That I would, he admitted readily. But that doesn't mean you aren't a lovely woman.
For a second she was tempted to halt Dumpling and throw herself in his arms. She didn't even dare look at him in case he could read her thoughts in her eyes. He was uncanny that way. It was as if he could read her mind. Or perhaps his thoughts echoed hers. Once again, dangerous ground. Thank you, she murmured, speaking as if he had told her she had good driving skills. And of course he wasn't one to accept that.
Who convinced you that you weren't lovely? He asked.
A mirror, she replied. He shook his head as if she spoke nonsense. You don't need to flatter me, Mr. Enright, Sabrina said, deciding this nonsensical conversation could not continue. I'm not like other women who feel all they have to offer are their looks. I have a mind. I read and try to improve myself all the time.
A blue stocking, he murmured.
Yes, I am a learned woman, she said proudly. During my mother's illness, books sustained me. Reading refreshed my spirits. However, I do not lack social graces. She wanted that understood.
Social graces are overrated.
They are never overrated. Did you not have a mother? Did she not teach you that? There was a flash of straight white teeth.
She tried her best, my lady.
I imagine you were a handful, Sabrina had to observe.
I imagine you were the same, he countered.
No, I always obeyed, she said. Although I admit to having an independent mind, perhaps that has been my problem. But I do try to make good use of my life. It is not very much now, but some day it will be. Yes, it will, she tacked on, realizing how empty her words sounded. Empty. There was a word she did not like.
And if you could do anything you wished, be anything,
what would you want? He asked. Sabrina shot him a dubious glance. We don't have choices in life.
Of course we do. Life is nothing but choices. However, first you must answer the question. What do you want?
She focused on the road a moment. What did she want?
Children, he suggested. A husband, home, and hearth?
She considered the matter. Well, yes, but I also think I'd like something more.
And what would that be?
Sabrina shook her head. Sometimes it is not good to think about wants. There are things we should have and things we shouldn't.
Thank you, Reverend Davidson, he said, laughter in his deep voice. But what if we could?
What would you ask for? She countered.
Freedom, he said.
I can imagine so. I would not want to hang for a crime I did not commit.
That is true, but I was not thinking of my sentence.
He studied the top of trees lining the road a moment before saying, I'm realizing I made my own chains. Right now, I do feel free. Free of regret, of sorrow, of grief. I made poor choices because I felt entitled.
And you wish freedom from those feelings?
Yes, he said thoughtfully, swinging his gaze back to meet hers. I don't know why life takes the turns it does or why we have the experience that we do, but I believe I'm done with doubt.
How can we do without doubt? How would we know we were taking the right paths in life without it?
Perhaps we've been on the right path all along but didn't realise it, he answered. Maybe each of us has to go through what we experience to live our lives fully.
Sabrina laughed. You are very philosophical, Colonel.
Thank you, Miss Davidson, he answered. In truth, I usually am the furthest thing from a philosopher.
He reached over and took the reins from her.
May I?
She let him have them. They travelled a little ways, then he said, Miss Davidson, don't be afraid of life. Don't hold back, and don't delay. I have nothing to hold back or delay, she answered. My world is very small.
It won't be once you know what you want.
What of you, sir? Will you find the answers to the questions you ask? A slow, confident smile found its way across his face, his gaze on the road ahead.
I believe I have. For better or worse, I want my future.
Such a cryptic answer tickled Sabrina's curiosity, but before she could ask questions, they arrived at Anfield's Drive. Dumpling, always ready for oats, knew where they were and picked up his pace. So it was that they pulled into the stable yard with a bit of energy and what style one can muster when driving a pony cart. Sabrina could have directed them to the front door, but family usually went straight to the stables, then walked the path leading to the house. The stable lads called a greeting and rushed to help her from the cart, but Mr. Enright was there. He opened the door to the cart, climbed out, then offered his hand to her. For a second, Sabrina hesitated. When he left, and he would leave either to be hanged or to travel on with his life, she would feel emptier. He would move toward his future. She would stay behind. That was an unsettling thought, one that made her sad. She distracted herself by noticing a lad dressed in maroon and silver livery coming down the road from the main house. He was leading a high-stepping grey, pulling a high-perched phaeton with yellow wheels. She knew the owner of the rig, and her fear hollowed her out. Coming here today had been a mistake. Mr. Enright immediately noticed the change in her manner.
What is the matter? He asked.
That rig, she said, leaning toward him so that the lad wouldn't overhear. It belongs to Owen Campbell.
Chapter 15. Owen Campbell. Good God! It could not be mere coincidence that Owen Campbell, owner of the Rook's Nest, where Gordana had been murdered, was calling on the Earl of Tay. Especially at the time when Mac had escaped hanging and Richard Davidson had gone missing. Something was afoot. Mac was willing to stake his life on it.
We should not talk to my uncle now, Miss Davidson was saying. We need to wait until Mr. Campbell is gone.
Oh, no, Mac countered. This is the perfect time, however. You will stay here.
He'd met Campbell only once where they'd looked each other in the eye, but he'd observed him around the Rook. There was something about the man that Mac could not like. He seemed secretive, and he agreed with Mrs. Bosley's description of Campbell as greedy. Mac knew officers of that stripe, and he'd learned not to trust them. Seeing a well-marked path leading through a line of beech trees to the house, Mac set off, anxious for a confrontation. He spent months puzzling over the whys of Gordana's death, and while he wanted to save his neck, he also wanted the mystery of her murder answered. He had just reached the sheltering trees when a hand hooked itself around his elbow and pulled hard. He stopped, annoyed to see that Miss Davidson had not listened to his order.
What?
He snapped.
You will not go up there, she commanded.
Yes, I will.
He shook off her arm, but she held on, digging her heels into the path's soft ground.
Impatience brought out his iron will. He whirled around. "What is it?"
She had not been expecting his temper. Blue eyes widened. Mac knew his power. When he spoke in that tone of voice, even hardened soldiers knew to beware. They certainly knew to obey. He expected her to perform an about-face and march smartly back to the pony cart where he'd told her to stay. However, instead of obedience, determination lifted her chin. He could have sworn under his breath. He was in for an argument now.
"You mustn't go there," she said. "Do you believe Campbell doesn't know who you are? You are accused of murder in an establishment he owns, and you believe he will happily ignore that the authorities wish to hang you? Wait until he leaves, then I will take you to talk to my uncle."
Mac looked at the house, looked at her, and started walking again up the path, except she had not released her hold. The woman had the strength of a sailor in her arms. She used all of it to yank him back. He could have roared his frustration.
"I am going there."
"Did you not hear me?" she said as if he were a simpleton. "They will hang you. My uncle is as befuddled as they come, and he might not have an issue with you, but Owen Campbell is cut of a different cloth. If he is involved in this, Mr. Enright, he'll run you through and act innocent all the while. He's capable of such."
"I'd relish crossing swords with him," Mac said. "As for hanging, I want answers, Miss Davidson. I have spent months and most of my sanity plagued by the wise. Furthermore, years on a battlefield have taught me there is only one way to engage the enemy, and that is by going forward."
"But what if Campbell had nothing to do with the girl's murder? Then you could be jeopardising your life on a goose chase."
"It is my chase and my goose," he replied. "Now, return to the pony cart, and if you see a hanging party, leave."
With that order, he started up the hill again. Of course, she didn't listen. He hadn't gone more than a few yards before she came walking up beside him, and then past him, her bonneted head high, her arms pumping.
"Miss Davidson," he said.
She paused, her feet marching in place, her arms swinging, the brim of her bonnet bouncing.
"Yes,"
she answered with a hauteur of a duchess.
"The pony cart is in the stable yard."
He pointed in the direction behind him.
"Are you going back there?" she asked.
"No."
"Well then, I'm not either. Someone needs to rescue you when you find yourself in trouble."
She took off up the path. For a moment, Mac was so angry he couldn't move. No one, absolutely no one, had ever countermanded him. Then again, he'd never met anyone as stubborn as Sabrina Davidson.
"Now I understand why you aren't married," he muttered.
"What did you say, Mr. Enright?"
she called over her shoulder.
"I couldn't hear you."
"That is probably a good thing," he returned,
and began walking up the path, lengthening his stride to catch up with hers. Together they presented themselves on the Earl of Tay's doorstep. The house itself was a country manor that had seen better times. Mac knew the sort. He'd grown up in such a place. The trim needed painting and the stones repointing. He imagined it was quite draughty when winter winds blew. Miss Davidson, headstrong lass that she was, didn't wait for him but rapped on the door. The hinges creaked as a butler, a tall man with a stoic presence, opened the door almost immediately. He smiled with genuine warmth at Miss Davidson, while, in that manner all butlers seemed to have, gave Mac a disapproving stare. Mac returned his look with open curiosity. Something about the man stirred a memory. The butler had a long jaw, and his large shoulders had a bit of stoop to them. There had to be Viking in his ancestry. Their paths had crossed before. But when would Mac have met a country butler?
"Miss Sabrina, good afternoon."
"Good afternoon, Ingold. I wish to see my uncle."
The butler shifted his weight, as if he'd been anticipating the question, and had an answer.
"I'm so sorry, Miss Sabrina, but the Earl is indisposed."
"Because he has a guest?" "We know Mr. Owen Campbell is here, but it is imperative I speak to my uncle."
"Unfortunately, that is not possible,"
the butler said, as if he truly regretted saying those words, but he was already closing the door. Mac leaned forward and pressed his forearm against the wood panel.
Tell your master, the Earl of Balin requests a moment of his time.
The Earl of Balin. For the first time in his life, Mac had used the title without remorse. It had come out of him as if he owned it, as if it were his to use. That was freedom. He'd not realised how much he'd held back out of guilt until this moment. But the title was his. Balin was who he was. And his use of the title was not about impressing anyone. It was about allowing himself the right to it. Later, he would mull over this change of attitude. But for now, he didn't wait for the butler's response. He pushed the door hard, forcing it open. To her credit, Miss Davidson ducked under the servant's arm and placed herself inside. "Yes, please, Ingold," she said. "My uncle needs to see us." The butler wavered in indecision, then confided, "Miss Davidson, you do not want to be here. There are bad doings going on. Please go."
"We know, Ingold. Announce us. After all, the Earl of Balin is here."
She threw out Mac's title, as if she was put out with him. He was rather pleased with himself.
"No, Miss Sabrina," Ingold answered. "It is not good. Not good at all."
But he turned and walked down the hall, and that is when Mac placed where he'd seen the butler. Ingold had been at the prison the night of his escape. He'd been the first man to run up to Kenyon after he'd been shot. Mac had not had a good look at his face, because he had what he considered the more important challenge of saving his neck in mind. But he could not forget the man's gait, or the way his shoulders stooped. Kenyon was from this area. The butler? Campbell?
"Ingold is going to my uncle's study. That is where Campbell is," Miss Davidson observed, interrupting his musing.
Mac nodded. "Let us not wait for permission. Let us join them."
He placed his hat on a side table. He was tense, yet anxious, ready for battle.
"Would it do any good if I suggested you wait here?"
he asked as he started toward the study.
"No,"
Miss Davidson said, falling at a step behind him. And then she whispered furiously, as if he had not noticed her earlier jab.
"Earl, you have a title, or did you make that up?"
"I haven't made up any of my titles."
The butler had stopped to knock on a door. Mac raised his hand to signal for her to halt. They stood partially hidden from view by a wall supporting a staircase.
"But yes, I'm an earl. Surprised?"
She scrunched her nose in what he found to be the most adorable way possible.
"Not truly. Do you have any other titles of which I should be aware? You seem to run the gamut from felon to titled lord with everything in between."
He smiled at her sarcasm. He couldn't help himself. This Scottish lass was a good ally to have on his side.
"It is an empty title. No money, no land, and I've just inherited it."
Her lips parted in understanding.
"Your brother's death?"
"I haven't quite managed to grow comfortable with it. It seems wrong that he dies and I benefit. Where is there joy in that?"
"I can understand," she murmured.
And he knew she did. She was quick, smart. A man didn't have to spend his day explaining his thoughts to her. A voice from inside the study had called for Ingold to leave them alone. The butler knew they followed. He wasn't blind. He looked to Mac, who nodded with a silent order for him to be persistent. The butler knocked with more force on the door. The study door opened.
"What?"
an angry voice snapped. Mac could hear Ingold explaining that the Earl of Balin was insisting that he must see Tay.
"Balin? I've never heard of a Balin,"
Mac overheard another man say. He recognised the voice. Owen Campbell's.
"Stay here," Mac said to Miss Davidson. "And I mean, stay right there."
He moved forward swiftly, coming to stand beside the butler just as Campbell said,
"Send him away."
"Too late,"
Mac said, very pleased with himself as he pushed his way past Ingold.
"I'm here."
He enjoyed the start of alarm on Campbell's face as he recognised who the Earl of Balin was. The library was a large room, shelves filled with books lined one wall, and there was a large ornate desk by the window to take advantage of the light. At one time, the Earls of Tay must have had wealth.
The current Earl of Tay was sprawled out in one of the upholstered chairs in front of a cold marble hearth. He was a tall man with a decided paunch and a complexion lost to his dissipations. However, right now his cheeks were red, as if he'd been struck repeatedly and tear-stained. Owen Campbell stood by the door, his leather gloves in his hands. He was not what one would call a handsome man. He combed his hair forward to hide his baldness and had a taste for military style. His jacket was the cut of a Prussian officer's, with a double row of silver buttons. His shining Hessian boots, sporting silver tassels, would have made even those vain German officers jealous for the quality of the leather. Overall, Mac thought him a mockery of a man. The Earl recognised Mac. He gave a low groan and covered his face.
This is worse. It keeps growing worse.
Quiet, Campbell ordered. What the bloody hell are you doing here?
Careful of your tongue, Mac answered. We have a lady present, he pointed out, as Miss Davidson came charging into the room, as he'd assumed she would.
Sabrina,
the Earl said, alarmed.
Why are you with this man?
She's not listening to me, I can tell you that, Mac informed him. She's far from obedient. I order her to stay in one place, she does as she pleases. Do you have that problem with her as well?
Miss Davidson shot him a look of annoyance as she hurried to her uncle's side. Don't listen to him, he prattles.
Prattles?
Mac repeated, offended. She waved him away with a gloved hand and knelt by the Earl's chair. But look at you, uncle, you look terrible. What is the matter?
I need a drink, was the reply.
The Earl lurched to his feet and stumbled toward the decanters on a side table.
It will be all right. It will. It will.
You have had enough, Campbell said,
and the Earl stopped dead in his tracks. His reaction was so abrupt it was almost comical. Mac wondered how Campbell had that sort of power over him. Apparently, so did Miss Davidson. She came to her feet. What have you been doing to him? She demanded of Campbell.
We were visiting, was the answer.
Then he countered with, what are you?